All right. Good to see you, my friends. Gloria, we got Toby, Zadie, Erwin. See your face. And Judd, good to see you as well. Oliver, Henry, and Melissa. I'm just going to do a general. Or wherever that was already muted. So that. Okay. Too soon. All right. I'm going to mute, but you'll be able to unmute yourself, as always, God willing, to ask any questions. Okay, so we're on Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. I'm going to lower my shinder so I can see you guys. Okay, so this is where we left off. We left off, really, this discussion harkens back to the Mishnah on Yud Amud Aleph on 10a, in which we're dealing with the issues of what happens when you are in a legitimate sukkah. The sukkah has proper dimensions, albeit there's a bed or some other structure in the sukkah that's interposing between you and the schach that you want to be sitting under. So we said, in general, when you have a kinofos, a four-post bed, so that's going to be puzzle. That's an issue because it's mafsik. You're in an ohel. You're in a separate structure interposing between you and the schach. However, we said that a kila is different. Well, we're going to talk about a kila, what kind of kila we're talking about tonight. But naklite hamita is different. Naklite hamita is basically the triangle. And the light's just turned off over here because I'm in the sitting room. Just give me a moment to flip it right on so I don't have to keep going and waving the whole session. Right, and we're back. Okay. So we're up to the second line on the top of Yud Amud Aleph, top of 11a, which we have a Lishna Achrina. We have a different version. So previously we had this term called a Kila. Now the Kila we talked about 2 weeks ago when we last met was a structure more akin to a four-post bed. But now we're going to talk about what's called a kilas chasanim. And this kilas chasanim is basically resembles more like your triangular bed, which we said is not as kavua. It's not as established. It's not as problematic given the right circumstances because it's a slanted wall. So we're going to delve right into that right now. Lishna Achrina. Amila Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mutter Lishon Bechilas Chasana Besuka Lefisha Ein Lagak Afal Pi Shegvoa Asara. So one is allowed to sleep inside this Kilas Chasan. It's Kilas Chasanim. It's triangular slanted roof bed inside a sukkah. As long, even if it exceeds 10 tefachim, right? Even if it's like, it's a real structure, it's above 10 tefachim. Why? As long as she'ein lagag, it doesn't have a roof. Now, what do you mean? Already doesn't have a roof. What do you mean is, as long as, you know, the upper part that goes across is thin, that it's less than a tefach. So that means effectively there is no real roof there. And therefore it's not considered to be interposing between you and the schach. However, Nesve is what appear to be contradicted because it says, bekila chavaso. It says that someone sleeps in a kila and a sukkah, they're not yotze. Well, here's the simple answer. We just said, well, provided there is no gag. What, in the case of that brisa, why can you not sleep in a kilas chasanim and a sukkah? Because the case there the Bryce is dealing with, we could reconcile by saying is that it does have a gag. It does have some sort of little mini roofing on top.
Rabbi, to what extent is it relevant, because they're using the term chasanim, that this is a bridal canopy?
If it's just
a regular tent, does that change anything, or is bridal relevant?
It's a good question. My understanding is that the bridal component's a little bit of a red herring. I think it's just describing a piece of furniture that people are familiar with. But I don't, you know, interestingly, you could ask is is the, you know, whether he would be exempt from using the sukkah on his wedding night. We know that there's a patur from Kriya Shema. Mm-hmm. Now, Kriya Shema requires extra kavana. So maybe that's why Kriya Shema is different. But just because you bring this up, we're going to get to this, I think, more in the second chapter. One of the main heterim for a married man not to go in a sukkah is that it says teshu kein tiduru. You're supposed to dwell in the sukkah like you would in your house. Well, if your wife doesn't want to be a camper and sleep in the sukkah, well, you're going to leave her alone inside. So maybe there's some element to this over here. You know, okay, there's something to think about. Definitely the laws of marriage do have bearing on Hilchos Sukkah, but I'm not sure over here. I wouldn't be surprised if someone darshins a connection, but I think Bapashtus, it's a little bit of a red herring. If you were living in Talmudic times, you'd be like, oh yeah, of course, Akilas Chasanim, I saw that in not Bibath Miyot or whatever you call it, Zahorna Levracha, whatever you call those places. Raymore Flanagan. Okay. Now, next question. Is that also out of business now? Oh no. Okay. We don't want to make any Ein Haris. All right. Tashima Nakalitin Shnai. Okay, we quoted this last time. This appeared, I believe, also in Yunama Beis. Tashima Nakalitin Shnai Kinevos Arba. So we know that Nakalitin are two poles. Kinofos is a four-post bed. Okay, Shkayach, we know that already. Piris al-Gabi Kinofos. So if you put a cover over the four posts, Psulam, then it's disqualified because it's interposing. Al-Gabi Naklitin, however, on top of Naklitin, as we said, the two-post bed, Kshera. Bilvad, Shelo yu Naklitin Gavo min Hamita Asar Tfachim, as long as it doesn't exceed 10 Tfachim. Ah! It said nothing to do about whether it has a gag or not, whether it has a roof. So ha-gvoen min ha-mita asara psula. That implies that it will always be possible if it exceeds 10 tefachim. Af al-pi she'ein la-gag. Even if it doesn't have a gag. So why is it over there that the gag doesn't seem to make a difference? So now we got to start. You know, again, it's already difficult to understand the furniture they had back then, but apparently there are fine distinctions. Shiny naklitin tikfi. Naklitin are considered to be kavua, more so than akilas chasanim, even though they look very similar to each other. So naklitin are considered kvi. Ah, but ikvi, if they're considered to be firm and established, the habikikinafos, they should invalidate your dwelling in the sukkah, just like a four-post bed. Oh, so now we gotta split hairs a little bit. Legami kinofos lo kvi, legami kila kvi. So when it comes vis-a-vis a four-post bed, it's not considered to be firm and established. Vis-a-vis kilas chasanim, it is firm and established. And therefore, naklitin, they are problematic when they exceed 10 tefachim, regardless of whether they have a gag or not. But when it comes to a kila, kiyas chasanim, it would depend on their height and whether there is a gag or not. Okay, a little technical over there, but glad we did that. Okay, moving forward. Darash Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Mutar lishon bekila afal pisha yeshla gag, the afal pisha kva asara. Oh, wow. This is a very liberal shita over here. He says you could sleep in a kila and a sukkah, even if it has a roof, meaning has the tefach roof, and even if it's 10 tefachim tall. Wait, who holds like that? Ah, oh, come on. Rabbi Yehuda, like the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, that will come up on Chaf Aleph of the Beis. To Amar, lo asi ohel arai umavato ohel keva, that Rabbi Yehuda holds, that a temporary, or no, like a weaker ohel cannot, because the sukkah is also temporary to a certain extent, but a weaker ohel cannot come and be mevatel the fact that you're dwelling within a broader, stronger ohel, which is a sukkah. The Tanan, as we taught in the Mishnah there on Chaf Amud Beis, on Rabbi Huda, Nogen ayinu lishon tachas amita b'fnei hazakenim. When we go to visit the elders, the Bacharim, we'd be sleeping under the bed there because there was no room. Everyone was packing into that sukkah. And yet he held it was okay. All right. So this this rogue Shita is Rabbi Yehuda, who says, I don't care how, I don't care if it's Toler, I don't care if it's a gag, it's not an issue. Ah, okay, great. So then, why, Vilayim Aleph Rabbi Yehuda, why did you have to give us that whole exposition, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, just say you rule in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda? Ah, so here's why he had to spell it out, why he couldn't just say, I'm asking, I agree with Rabbi Yehuda. Iyamar halachic Rabbi Yehuda, because had he only said the halach is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, have a mina. Hani mili mita de la gaba asuya avokil de la tocha asuya imalo. I would think Rabbi Yehuda only taught that regarding a bed. A bed, you know, you sleep on top of, that's it. It doesn't contain you. But a kila, which you sleep within, it surrounds you, I would think that's a bigger chiddush. That's a much tougher thing to say is not, you know, like, it's one thing to say you're under that bed, but when you're fully enveloped, that looks a lot more like you're in a separate structure. I would be more likely to posel that, or not posel, but rather say that you're not considered to be dwelling in the sukkah. Kamash Malan, that's why he had to spell it out, that he wanted to teach us that time of the Rabbi Yehuda, Deloasi Ola Raim Vata Ola Keva, Loshna Mita Veloshna Kila, that applies to a bed and applies to a kila that you're enveloped in within as well. That according to the school of thought of Rabbi Yehuda, you're still considered to be dwelling in the sukkah. Nonetheless, that's a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, so don't try this at home. Okay, that brings us to the Mishnah. Let me pause and just any questions, anything we can clarify at this point before we jump into the next Mishnah.
I got a question. Going back to the very beginning of the definition of a sukkah and a skach, mm-hmm. we're supposed to have a certain amount of sunlight that can come in. There has to be shade, but it can't be entirely shaded. And here we have a bed, and whether it's got a V-shaped covering over it or a flat covering, we're still blocking out the light. So we're invalidating the sukkah.
Right. So your question, I think, also applies to a case we had earlier where we said that you can put decorations inside a sukkah, right?
So they're on the wall. They're not blocking the skach, yeah. Or they're hanging from the beams that are supporting the skach. They're not at the same level.
So what's interesting is, we've had cases earlier on in which you can have, when we're doing the sugya of Dofen Akuma and Lavud, we talk about cases where, in theory, you could be sitting in a part of a sukkah that doesn't have enough schach, but because the entire sukkah is considered kosher, even the quote-unquote non-kosher part is thereby validated. So the question here is, I have schach that's blocking out the sun. This is, I just have an object in the sukkah that's blocking me from sitting under the schach directly. So the question is, the sukkah itself is inherently kosher. It's not an issue of a sukkah on top of a sukkah. We dealt with that. The sukkah is 100% kosher. The question is, am I considered to be sitting inside this kosher sukkah at this time? So that's exactly. That's very much the question. I think in those cases where there's an actual roof, like where you have a four-post bed, you're not considered to be sleeping within the sukkah because of the very point that you're making.
Yeah, but if it's pitched in a V shape, yeah. It's doing the same thing that the covering on a four-post bed does. It's blocking out any view of the space between the pieces of the sukkah.
The fundamental question here isn't, am I getting shade from the schach at this point? The question is, am I considered to be, and then there's more alumnus, Machlok had to understand, but basically, am I considered to be sitting in a separate structure? Now we know halachically, a structure generally in halacha is defined by a minimum of 10 tefachim. So if it's less than 10 tefachim, in certain cases, we could say, despite the fact there's something blocking between me and the schach, it's no worse than if there are decorations interposing between me and the skach. So the question is, am I considered to be fundamentally in a separate room or separate structure altogether? That's, I think, the heart of the question here. But your point's well taken. Okay, just a few supplemental points before we go forward. Rav Eliashiv, in his Haharos, he points out this actually connects to what we did in the previous Gemara as well. But if you recall, just a few moments ago, Rabbi Yehuda was going to visit his Rabbanim. And we had a case on Yunam and Beis in which a number of Chachamim, when they went to a sukkah that, according to them, was not kosher, they said, Anon shluchei mitzvah anon b'tur min ha-sukkah. Yeah, we might be in a non-kosher sukkah, but we're doing a mitzvah. Does anyone remember what the mitzvah was in the Gemara? Yunam and Beis on 10b? The mitzvah was they were going to visit the Reish Galusa. I believe they call it the Exilarch. They're visiting one of the great leaders of the generation. And I saw someone on mute. What are you going to say?
Exilarch? I was going to say, wasn't it Bikur Cholim?
So if you look at Rashi, Rashi doesn't say, though I'm interested where you got the Bikur Cholim from.
I thought that was why they were visiting, but...
Maybe, but according to Rashi, at least, Rashi said, Lahakbo pnei Rosh Gola, dechayiv odom lahakbo pnei Rabba v'regel, because you're supposed to visit your Rebbe on the holidays, on the Yom Tovim. So because he was considered a Rebbe of the generation, a Gadol Hador has a status of being everyone's Rebbe. So they're visiting one of the Gedolim. So since they're Osik in a mitzvah, they're a Pater in a mitzvah. I guess I didn't get my voice back completely yet. Since they're osik mitzvah pater mina mitzvah. When you're osik in one mitzvah, then you're exempt from other mitzvahs until you complete it. Now, the interesting thing is when it comes to Talmud Torah, if I'm the only one who could do a mitzvah at Yeshua Asai Diacherim, so then I'm supposed to close my Gemara and I'm supposed to go do the mitzvah. So here's the funny thing. Why would visiting, coming to learn from this rabbi be more important than actually sitting and fulfilling the mitzvah sukkah? They should say, look, let me fill the mitzvah sukkah and I'll visit my rabbi another time.
But so, also, isn't there a question of d'oraita and d'rabbanan? In other words, if the two mitzvot were equal, okay, you're putter. But if one is more significant, you have to do the more significant one.
Ah, okay, interesting. So are you saying Nala Hakel Pnei Rabba would not be Doraisa necessarily?
And Talmud Torah.
I don't know. No.
Talmud Torah is not Doraisa?
No, Talmud Torah can negate Kulam.
Ah, that's right. Rory makes a really good point. Talmud Torah can negate Kulam.
Is that Talmud Torah though visiting the?
Very good. So Henry saw that I pulled the wool over your eyes. I purposely conflated things for the question. Is this a mitzvah Talmud Torah? No. Alkan Iri beholech lilmon etzla rabba. When you're going to visit your rebbe, dahainu l'shamish talmidei chachamim. You're going to pay homage to talmidei chachamim. Ubeshimush. There's a separate mitzvah to go and to visit the Talmidei Chachamim, to give kavod Torah. And by the way, when we learned Maseches Megillah way back when, all the way at the beginning of Maseches Megillah, if you remember, we had a sugya of a hierarchy that if it is Mikra Megillah, I have to close my Gemara. What about Talmud Torah to Rabbim? Talmud Torah to Rabbim? Public Torah study is greater than just a single person studying Torah. So it may very well be that the mitzvah of sukkah would be, for lack of a better term, supersede the mitzvah of Torah study alone. But here is the mitzvah of paying tribute to Kavanah Torah, to honoring the Torah, to honoring the Torah leader. So perhaps that would supersede the mitzvah of sukkah. Okay, so that was Rav Eliashiv. Another thing I want to share. The next piece is on the Mishnah. So back to the Gemara. Here we go. Back to the Gemara. So, Hidla Allah esa geven besadlas besakisos besichich al gaba psula. So we actually referred to this Mishnah a little bit earlier. The Mishnah says, if you take vines of grapes or gourds or ivy and you put on the sukkah and then you put tzchach over it, psula, it's going to be invalid. However, if there's more kosher schach, meaning sukkah cannot be attached to the ground. One of the conditions we're about to say is that it has to be disconnected. Oh, shek tzatzan, or if you disconnected all the ivy and gourd and vines from the ground, and now it's detached. So then, shera, then it'll be a kosher sukkah. Why? Zeha klal, this is an important rule. Kol anything that is susceptible to becoming tamei and does not grow from the ground, you cannot use for schach. Whereas anything that is not susceptible to becoming tamei, the yidula mina aretz, and it grows from the ground, misachimbo. Then we can use that for schach. Without getting into the details right now, the getting something growing from a ground is not so hard. But you know what's a complicated issue that comes up is the condition that it cannot be susceptible to being mekabel tuma. Why? Because many of us use bamboo mats. And the thing is that when something becomes a kli, when it becomes a vessel, when it becomes like a usable object, actually, so then it could be mekabel tuma. It's susceptible to becoming tame. So we're going to actually talk about a case later on about mats. And there's going to be a question about mats becoming tamei and whether they can be used. And so it's not so pashut whether one can use a bamboo mat for making a sukkah. It requires a broader discussion, but I'm just going to throw that one out there and put it on your radar. Okay. Any just pure clarification questions on the Mishnah? All right, into the Gemara we go. This is going to be a really fundamental sugya to remember, at least just the general Rashi Prakim, the general principles. We're going to be doing some comparing, contrasting with the laws of tzitzis right now. Very, very interesting ideas. Just before we get in, because the Gemara is not going to say it right away, there's a concept called tasa velo min ha'asui, which basically means that there's an order to how you have to make your sukkah. You can, if you find a way, you go like Wingardium Leviosa, and you suspend your schach amid air, and then you build the walls around it, that would not be a kosher sukkah. You have to build the sukkah, it has to be kosher, and then you put the schach on top. So the issue that the Gemara is about to deal with is that at the time that you put the ivy or you put the vines on top of your sukkah, they were not kosher. And when you detach them, you got an issue because you never did a maisa of putting down kosher schach on your sukkah. It was puzzle when you put it down. So how do we address such a case? How do we rectify that into the Gemara? Yasir Rav Yosef Kameder Avuna V'yasir Kamar Oshek Satsang Sheira. Right? So we say either... When we said that when you cut it, the Mishnah says to cut it, it's not just enough to detach it, but you have to also sever it as well. You have to move it around as well. Why? What does moving around accomplish? We'll get into the lumdus in just a moment, but the general idea is that it's as if you're replacing it back down, but you're doing it legitimately this time, because now you're replacing it as kosher schach. Now, there's just a little bit of a quick scuffle over here. Amar le Rav Huna, Hashmuel Amar, wait a minute, didn't Shmuel say this? Adrein Rav Yosef Ape, Rav Yosef turned to him in anger, Amar le, Atu mi kamina alcha delo Amar Shmuel, Amar Rav, Amar Shmuel. So do you think I meant to say that Shmuel didn't say it as well? No, both Rav and Shmuel said it. Amar le Rav Huna said, no, Hachi kamina alcha. The Shmuel Amra v'lo Rav. No, I mean to tell you specifically that Shmuel holds like this. There's no way that Rav held that you have to go ahead and you have to move around and replace the schach down in order to rectify the sukkah once you sever the vines from the tree.
Rabbi, isn't the issue taking possession so that it's yours? Like, isn't that a reason to move it around? Because if it's part of the ground, then you haven't really acquired it because you didn't take possession if it's still in the ground.
But you acquire the whole ground and everything's attached to it when you purchase it or inherit it.
I agree with my grandfather's point. I'm not sure to what degree also formal ownership is important here, but let's say it was, you own your backyard, right? So it's not so much ownership, it's that the schach is puzzle when you put it down.
What if I'm building a sukkah on somebody else's property?
Yeah.
If I have permission. I have permission to, you know,
yeah, that's a put kosher it somewhere sukkah.
Else. Or I'm just a renter, so the property is not mine.
You're allowed to do that, yeah.
Right, so then wouldn't I need to take possession of the elements of the sukkah? Isn't that part of the requirement?
I don't believe so. Well, you know what you're thinking of. You're thinking more of when it comes to Arba Mina, when it comes to the four species, on the first day we say Lachem, that you have to be an owner of them.
Yeah.
But
I think, Rabbi, it's the fact that Chag HaSukkot Ta'aselecha, right? Shivat Yamim. So the,
I think there is such a
Havamina. Right?
I recall there. I think there was some Havamina. There was some Havamina of having ownership, but I don't think that's definitely not normative. That's definitely not how we conclude. But we do conclude on the first day of Sukkot when it comes to the Arba Minim, you need to be the actual formal owner of them. So stay tuned for the third parak of Sukkah, in which we'll get in depth on that one. Okay, going forward. So why is it that Rav cannot be the one who says they require to go the extra step to replace the schach down? The Rav Achshuri Mechasher, now the Girsa should add in a little bit more, below Nanua. So Rav says it's kosher even, even without replacing it. Why? So hold on tight for this one. Ki ha derav amr chasida ramatachelsa lefurzuma the inchi base. So what he would do is, Rashi points out that Rav Amram Chasida had this very unique shita. He held that the words risem oso, you should see the tzitzis, is only an exclusion for someone who's a suma, who's blind. But in general, he holds avoksus lailas Rashi chayiv v'havi mitzah se shalos man grom v'nashim chayavos. But he holds in general that tzitzis, you're obligating tzitzis even during the nighttime, which consequently means that even women are obligated in wearing tzitzis according to that shita. So he made, point being is, he made tzitzis for his wife as well. He was very progressive. And tulan v'lo pasak rashi chutin shalahen. He put on the strings, he put them in, he tied them up. But he didn't yet sever them. I don't have my picture book with me, but you can imagine when he put it in through two loops, and now they're still one long string. So he needs to actually sever the heads in order to make them into separate strings, not one long one that he kept looping through. So he asked, do I have to redo the tzitzis altogether, or is it sufficient for me just to snip and then it's kosher? So also the Kameder of Chia Bar Ashi Amar Le Hachi Amar Rav. This is what Rav told me. The fast gun, the Hank Sherim. All you gotta do is take. You're not supposed to use scissors. Actually, you're not supposed to use metal per se. If you have some other material, you can use those scissors. You're not supposed to use metal on the tzitzis. I believe a similar consideration for not using on Mizbeach as well. The Sefalim Barzel. They are shortening life. It's metal is used to shorten life. I think it's the same Sfara. Point being is, Fink Sharon, Alma, this is an important line, Sikasan Zohiasiyasan, that the act of severing the strings of the tzitzis is what turns it into a kosher pair of tzitzis. Achanami, Rav would hold here as well, Sitsasan Zohiasiyasan, that severing the vines from the ground also is sufficient to render the sukkah kosher, and there's no further action needed. You don't need to start pushing up and putting back down the schach. That's how we know that that is Rav's shita, because he's being consistent in how he understands tzitzis as well. Does the analogy make sense? Right? The act of severing is what's maksher. Good. Now, that would then mean Shmuel, who's his bar plukta, who disagrees, says it's not sufficient. So what does Shmuel require? Savar Shmuel, lo amrim sikasun sohi asiyasan. Now, is this really true that Shmuel holds that severing is not sufficient? Vatani Shmuel, sorry, Vatani Shmuel mishum Rabbi Chia hita l'shnei kranos bevas achas. Va'acher kach hasak roshei chutin shalahen sheirin. So we have a report that Shmuel actually taught that if you have the strings in two different corners in one shot, all you gotta do is karate chop it down, and then voila, you have kosher tzitzis. That sounds like it's in line with Rav Shita. So my lasha kosher akach posing, isn't he tying and then afterwards he's severing? The answer is no. The order here is important. The sequence is important. Lo shaposeg ba'akakach kosher. What's he doing? He first severed the heads while the strings were loose in the holes, and then he went ahead and he tied it. According to Rav, you could tie everything beforehand and then just got to cut the strings. According to Shmuel, no, at the time of tying, it needs to be kosher. You can't tie and then sever afterwards. Now, the question is, though, posek v'achak kosher ma'ala meimer. What's the chiddush, though? Okay, so, I mean, you know, everyone's fine with that. Of course, why would I think that if I sever and then tie, it wouldn't be okay? What's the chiddush over here? So, mahu detema, turning to the next amud, ba'inan knaf b'shas p'sil b'leika kamash malon. So, I would think, Rashi says, b'shasha shaposlo shatola bo, I would think at the time that I put the strings, I insert them into the holes and put them onto the garment, at that point, the strings already need to be severed and ready to go. Kamash malon, it's okay, you can tie it beforehand, and then you can sever the strings afterwards if you find it easier to do it that way. I don't know how to tie tzitzis, probably a skill I should pick up. So I'm not sure which way is easier, which way is harder. This does sound harder to me, but I don't know better. Okay. Should we go a little, you know what? Should we go a little further? What do you think? Yeah. Okay, we'll go a little bit further. Or actually, you know what? I have some supplemental material, so you can let me know how you're feeling after it. Okay, two things. One, a cute little idea I found in the Sefer Nitzotze Hashas. This is, I read this just to humor myself. Nitzotze Hashas is kind of like these Hasidish of Vartlach on the Gemara. So, you ever wonder, in the Mishnah we just learned, the Mishnah said that if something is mechubar lekarka, if something is connected to the ground, it's puzzled from serving as schach. Why? What's the fundamental reason behind it? It's not a halachic. This is more of like an agadic thing. So what's his name? Rabbi Yisrael Shom Yosef Mavuhush. Peri Yisrael. Okay. It's Peri Yisrael. Totally butchered that. He says, because the schach that's mechubar lekarka is puzzled. Why? The karka who bechinas gashmius. Ah, because the whole point of sukkah is that we elevate ourselves, the anani hakavo, the clouds of glory, we can close to Hashem. So we don't want to be connected to the ground, which means that we're connected to materialism and physicality. And that's his nice little vart on why mechubar lekarka is an issue. Okay, take it or leave it. More fundamental question I want to get to is this whole strategy of taking the schach and, you know, kind of you imagine with like a broom and you pick it up, but you pick up the next one and you replace everything down. Why do we, you know, what is actually from a halakhic level being accomplished? Now, according to Rashi says, let's see where Rashi, where's Rashi? Rashi says, yeah, Rashi uses the term lososra. Rashi describes it as like soser. What's soser? Like on Shabbos, one of the 39 melachos. Which melacha is soser? Demolition, destroying something. When you destroy something, that's stira. So Rashi says it's like you're destroying and recreating the sukkah. The issue is that, remember we learned all those rules about lavud, how if something's within three tefachim, it's still considered part of the sukkah. So if you're just like shaking around the schach a little bit, right? You're being menanea it. you're just moving a little bit up and down, you actually still have a kosher sukkah. So you didn't demolish any. So you're not resetting it. You're not making a new sukkah. So what actually did you accomplish then? So the Birchas Avraham says that, you know what's happening? This is like a really creative suggestion. There are those who hold, we don't paskin this way, which is why it won't be such a good answer, but there are those who hold that the same way the schach needs to be kosher, it can't be mekabel tumah, and it can't be mechubra lekarka. So too, the maimed, whatever is holding up the schach, also has to have the same, also cannot be mekabel tumah. It also has to be something that's not going to be susceptible to tumah as well. Ah, so you know what happens when you lift up the schach? Well, humans are susceptible to becoming tumah. So at that moment, when you pick up the schach, even though you're just like shaking it around a little bit, since it's now resting on your hands and you are susceptible to becoming tumah, so that's what invalidates the schach. It's not spatially being moved away, but by you holding it up, that's what invalidates it. And then when you put it back down, it's kosher again, but now it's done the right way. The issue with this is that we don't paskin it. That's not normative halach. So that's not really a good explanation. What about everyone else who doesn't hold that way? How do they explain what the benefit of nanea, of shifting it around is? So basically, what the Birchas Avram gets to saying is that it's not about recreating, it's not about destroying the sukkah, but it's about doing a new hanacha, about placing it down once more. Because he says the whole idea is to do a new hanacha. And his explanation is, ki ein haschach shayach l'sukkah, because the schach is not connected to the sukkah. Ki shem sukkah ba'omen shemunach shem schach l'shem tzichach, ava merzika b'yado, yishar to ein zeh sukkah ki lo munach u'batol shem. So it's not about changing the status of the sukkah per se. You're trying to change the status of the schach itself. And what's interesting, what comes out from this is he writes, so here's the thing. If the act of nanea was removing the schach, it's like the schach isn't there, it's like I'm destroying the sukkah. What if I have a 7x7 sukkah? 7x7 tefachim, remember, is the minimum shear. So I would think I only need to move one little section, like one tefach worth of schach away, and then I don't have a kosher sukkah. I don't need to trouble myself with the minanei of shaking the rest of the schach. But the truth is, it's not about demolishing the sukkah and recreating it. It's actually each and every bit of schach needs to be replaced. It's a new hanacha. So even for a sukkah that is 7x7 tefachim, you would need to do it for all 7x7 tefachim of schach. That's what he says. He near the besukkah tashel zayin al zayin gam kein. Because the idea is we're not postulating the sukkah, we're not disqualifying the sukkah and then revalidating it, but rather we're doing a new hanach altogether. I think I'll stop here before I keep coughing. Chill, we'll take a break here. Okay, good learning together and wishing you all a wonderful Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Shabbos.